and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Friday, August 23rd, 2024. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris accepts her nomination as the Democratic Party's presidential candidate.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America.
And some women in South Sudan advocate for a female candidate in the December elections.
I feel like, yeah, it's possible, though it's not going to be an easy thing, but I know even the men know that it's possible for a woman to become a president in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Just a month after President Joe Biden announced he would not seek re-election, Kamala Harris accepted the nomination to be the Democratic Party's presidential nominee. She contrasted her record and vision to that of her Republican rival, former President Donald Trump. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Odiakwaswara reports from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
Riveting musical performances during the final night of the Democratic National Convention included Pink, a national anthem sung by country group The Chicks.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
But Kamala Harris was the star of the night.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America.
Harris told her personal life story, connecting it to middle-class voters' experiences.
We are charting a new way forward. Forward to a future with a strong and growing middle class, because we know a strong middle class has always been critical to America's success. And building that middle class will be a defining goal of my presidency.
She highlighted her background as a former prosecutor, in line with her party's strategy to contrast against Republican nominee Donald Trump, who has been convicted in court.
Guilty. Guilty. Guilty.
Like many other speakers, she warned of a document outlining extreme right-wing policies linked to Trump. The former president denies it.
And we know what a second Trump term would look like. It's all laid out in Project 2025, written by his closest advisors. And its sum total is to pull our country back to the past. But America, we are not going back.
Inside the convention, it was all applause. Outside, pro-Palestinian rallies were held every day.
The protests outside have not swayed Harris' position on the war on Gaza. While she called out for more protection and aid for Palestinians, she reaffirmed support for Israel's security. She called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and a pathway towards a two-state solution.
Gaza is the Democrats' one area of disagreement. Out of around 4,700 delegates, 270 signed a petition demanding that the U.S. stop arming Israel. Out of around 4,700 delegates, 270 signed a petition demanding that the U.S. stop arming Israel. Harris' address to the nation came just a month after President Joe Biden announced he would not seek re-election.
Joe, I am filled with gratitude. Your record is extraordinary, as history will show, and your character is inspiring. And Doug and I love you and Jill and are forever thankful to you both.
As Harris spoke, Trump sought to reclaim attention by visiting the U.S.-Mexico border and hosting a social media event. But nothing dampened the delegates' enthusiasm.
She's setting us up for the future, a future we've been waiting for, a future that really represents everybody in this country. And we are elated that the wicked witch is dying and we're moving forward with a good life.
Kamala explained exactly what's at stake for this country. We're all flying the American flag. We all have USA, and that's for a reason, because this is a fight for this country.
Running mate Tim Walz joined Harris on stage to close out the convention with just 74 days to the election. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Chicago.
From Chicago, we go to Eastern Equatorial State, where women leaders are calling for a woman to run in South Sudan's presidential elections in December. They express their readiness to support a female candidate. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Kulang Vicky Daniel, a member of a women's association in Torit, says the time has come for women to use their votes to bring change to the country.
If there is an election to be conducted in this chamber, let them also come out so that we, like the women in Eastern Equatorial State, will be able now to vote where we can stand. So we are also advocating that if women are given this position of presidentially, I think they can even rule in a harmony way. Now we compare now with this current situation, things are high in the market, but there is nothing like intervention. So we women also advocating for this coming election, we want also to try a woman to lead us. We want to see some changes.
South Sudan is scheduled to hold its first national election on December 22nd. Some cultural beliefs and norms in South Sudan have prevented most women from contributing in how the country is governed. Rita Iromo Akim, a resident of Torit Town, says time has come for women to be part of the change, adding that what a man can do, women can do it better.
We are learning. Organizations are coming and talking about women rights, and there are also articles, and then the UN is also there supporting, making people to know about a woman, like the capability of a woman. So I feel like, yeah, it's possible, though it's not going to be an easy thing, but I know even the men know that it's possible for a woman to become a president in South Sudan.
KG Christine Franco, another Torit resident, says she remains hopeful that the election will bring change if more women are involved in politics.
We believe when a woman now leads us, we shall at least now accomplish the 35% affirmative that is being given to us. And as we all know, in nature, a woman is having that forgiving heart, a heart of love. So we believe if we put a woman, we really hope that will be the best. And I personally will stand for a woman, of course, if a woman stands.
A lawyer, Mary Anthony, acting chairperson of a women's group in Eastern Equatorial State, says the election could lead to having the right leaders in the right places.
The leaders we are electing, these are the leaders when we saw them at the grassroots. These are the strong leaders who can even really think for their people behind. But those leaders who are being ordered by degree, you know, that's why our country is now going out of really control. I'm really happy when we did the election in 2011. So we need that to happen again. We need to elect our people from the grassroots. We need our people whom we are suffering with them, because they know our suffering and even we know their struggle.
Supporters of President Salva Kiir's Sudan People Liberation Movement have endorsed him as their candidate. Peter Mayen Majundul, leader of the People's Liberal Party, said earlier this year that he will contest the top seat in the country. The Sudan's People Liberation Movement, which is loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar, has said the country is not ready for election in December. Other civics groups and some United Nations officials also have expressed concern about how ready the country will be for an election. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa, reporting from Torit, Eastern Equatorial State.
From Eastern Equatorial State, we move to Central Equatoria, where church leaders in South Sudan are warning the government not to neglect the church during the preparations for the coming elections. A retired bishop in the capital says security and civic education should be the first priority of the government to ensure free, fair and credible elections in the country. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
Churches in South Sudan played a key role in the country's struggle for independence by seeking funds to run schools, health centers, and to train workers. Some church leaders are calling on politicians and the government of South Sudan not to forget faith-based groups as the country prepares for elections in December. Elisa Soro, a pastor at a Baptist church in Juba, says the church can play a pivotal role in the electoral process and should be valued.
The government and all the concerned institutions should not neglect or should not exclude the church in the process of the election, because they play a very critical role. The church needs to be involved. The church needs to also be part of the whole process so that they can also ensure that there is a peaceful election in the country.
Retired Anglican Bishop Matthew Taban Peter from Wondruba Village in Central Equatoria State says for a successful election to take place, the government should work on important benchmarks to set up the vote.
When you want to conduct elections, first of all, the conditions to be met. One, there must be complete security so that people are free to move, free to express their views. Because even if some of these people who are going for elections, they are supposed to share their manifestos. If they are for the state, for the nation, even our top leadership, the manifesto must be explained to the people. And then people will come to the voting shrine with the idea that, okay, this is a very attractive vision.
Canon Kizito Yak Rink is an Anglican bishop and the provost of Good Shepherd Cathedral in the Western Barra Gazelle State Capital Wau. He says the government should be clear about the preparations for the elections.
All the citizens of South Sudan are ready for election, except the confusion that is going on now in South Sudan. The politician says there is election, sometimes there's no election. We don't actually understand whether there will be election or there's no election. And we don't understand why other people say there is no election. I would tell the government of South Sudan to continue for election, because even when we got independent from the north, things were not implemented all.
South Sudan is expected to hold election in December. However, some foreign diplomats, South Sudanese politicians, parties, and activists have expressed concern that the timeline for holding elections in December is not realistic. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan says more needs to be done for peace in the country. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. In Geneva today, Tom Pirellio, the U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan, says the country's warring parties have agreed to give safe access for humanitarian workers and aid. The Sudan Armed Forces, or SAF, and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces have been fighting each other for nearly 18 months, causing what the United Nations calls the world's greatest humanitarian crisis. Millions are displaced and face extreme levels of hunger. Pirellio elaborated on the agreement for getting aid into the country.
We got agreements, along with many people around the world and in the region, to open ADRE, got commitments from the RSF and SAF and others to activate around that. And for the first time in 4 months, trucks moved across the border into areas where over 500,000 women and children face starvation. We got similar agreements from the RSF and SAF for expanded access along the Daba Road. We are in active negotiations with the parties on multiple potential routes for Sennar, which would open up another 11 million with access.
The United States began talks in Geneva on August 14, initially aiming to end hostilities and ease the suffering of civilians. However, the Sudan Armed Forces did not join the talks directly in Switzerland, and negotiators communicated with them by telephone separately on all issues. One issue all parties discussed was the treatment of civilians by the two military forces.
We all know we've seen the horrific atrocities of rape, sexual slavery, starvation used as a weapon of war, shelling, bombing, and the daily terrors that are the realities for the Sudanese people. We've gotten an agreement from the Rapid Support Forces for a code of conduct that will be issued to their soldiers. We'll have many of the basics of international humanitarian law, including protections of women and protections related to farming and the harvest, so that we can look at the issues, not just of the current famine, but how we begin.
Pirellio acknowledged the talks did not achieve as much as originally hoped.
So we do think it's extremely important that we have found some breakthroughs on humanitarian access for millions and millions inside Sudan. But this is just the beginning. We need to see the results from the parties, whether that's on protection of civilians or humanitarian access. And we need to continue to build where we can.
Saudi Arabia and Switzerland were co-hosts of the talks, which the African Union, Egypt, the United Emirates, and the United Nations join in what is being called the Alliance for Advancing Life-Saving and Peace in Sudan Group. In a statement at the closing of the talks today, the group said it remains open to further negotiations with both sides to end the fighting. The United Nations has called Sudan the worst displacement crisis in the world. It is where more than 12 million people have been displaced and more than 15,000 others have been killed in a civil war that broke out in April of last year. The head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee spoke Thursday in Chicago on the sidelines of the Democratic National Committee about the plight of Sudanese and what the U.S. is doing to try to end the conflict in the country. VOA's Carol Van Dam has more.
Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland, chairman of the powerful Foreign Relations Committee, talked to reporters here about a number of conflicts around the world, mostly about Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the Israeli-Hamas war. In an exclusive interview after his remarks at an event sponsored by the U.S. State Department's Foreign Press Center, VOA asked Cardin about what some observers have called the forgotten war, Sudan, and if Vice President Kamala Harris becomes president, what she might do differently.
I mentioned it all the time. It is a huge crisis. We don't want Darfur. We remember that from our earlier days. So we have to keep the focus on it. We're keeping the focus on it. I know that Vice President Harris is fully engaged on what's happening in Sudan.
Cardin says U.S. officials are cautiously optimistic about the ongoing peace talks underway in Geneva. So far, the only result of those talks has been the recent reopening of three crossing points for humanitarian aid. Representatives of the United States, the United Nations, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and one of the parties to the conflict, the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, have attended the meetings in Switzerland. Cardin says he hopes countries that have taken sides in the brutal war will stop providing weapons to either the Sudanese army or the RSF.
We hope that will become real. And we hope that the countries, particularly countries we have relations with, will recognize that they need to back off and make sure that there's a real process for peace.
The Geneva talks are focused on implementing agreements signed in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, in May of 2023. That Jeddah declaration was signed by both parties to protect civilians and respect international humanitarian law. Another Jeddah agreement signed just 9 days later reiterated the importance of protecting civilians during a 7-day ceasefire. But that ceasefire was violated within hours, as were subsequent ceasefires. The International Rescue Committee, which puts out an emergency watch list each year on places of dire humanitarian conditions, placed Sudan at the top of its list this year. Carol Van Dam at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois.
From Chicago, we move to Jonglei State, where authorities in Ayot County say floods have displaced thousands of families after heavy rain pounded parts of the state this week. The executive director in the office of the Ayot County Commissioner says over 60,000 people are homeless and authorities are mobilizing people to build dikes to prevent further displacements. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Kwart reports from the Upper Nile State Capital, Malakal.
Kwaki Stephen, coordinator for South Sudan's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Ayot County, says almost 160 people displaced by floods around the county also have lost livestock and food supplies.
Most of the crop which was being planted earlier this year were now spoiled by the flood this time. So the cattle also were being killed by the water. as well as goat. So the parents, they just keep the children, those who are not able to walk. This needs the urgent intervention to rescue the life of these vulnerable people.
He says several areas are underwater, adding that some families are stranded on an island because of a lack of services.
They have a place called Pakwem, Hart, Menime, and Wanmacha. Those places, there are some people who are living there. It is a part of the island in Ayo County. So we are very worried about them, where they can survive, because coming to this side of Ayo, you need a canoe to carry them. Benti also is too far away for them.
Ngatkor Chual is the executive director in the office of the commissioner of Ayo County. He says an influx of internally displaced people from neighboring villages has overwhelmed the local government's ability to offer support.
The county government tried to ask those who came, and they have no tukul plastic sheet to cover themselves. So he tried to talk to the people, provided the vulnerable people, especially the old and open. It is more than even 60,000 people who are here, because now you know the center.
VOA cannot independently verify the figures of the families affected by the floods in Jonglei State. Chual says local authorities have mobilized residents to build dikes to control water in Ayo town. Paul Gare, field project manager for the non-profit South Sudan Women United Group, says families in Ayo County have contacted his organization for support.
If we secure some funding, then we can expand our operation there and actually support women, youth and girls. But for now, what we will be doing, it is to advocate to the agencies actually on the ground and to the community also to make their own die.
South Sudan's National Ministry of Water Resources and Irrigation says Nimuli, Mangala and Bor are experiencing high water levels. Malakal town is on high alert because of reports of rising water levels in the White Nile. The Ju River in Wau, Western Barrel Gazali State, and the Sobat River in Nanagdiar village in Baliet County of Upper Nile State are also experiencing increasing water levels. For VOA News, I am Amira Bramcourt, reporting from Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
From Malakal, we go to Turkey, where the country has been mediating between Ethiopia and Somalia, which are locked in a dispute, mainly over sea access for Ethiopia. At issue is a deal that Ethiopia signed earlier this year with the self-proclaimed breakaway region of Somaliland. Ankara's mediation efforts are seen as underlying its growing influence in the strategic Horn of Africa region. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Today, we conclude.
Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan described this month's second round of talks between his Ethiopian and Somali counterparts as constructive, even though no deal was reached. Ethiopian-Somali tensions have been on the rise since January, when Ethiopia signed a memorandum of understanding with Somaliland, a breakaway state from Somalia. Under the agreement, Ethiopia would secure sea access in exchange for recognizing the breakaway state, a deal condemned by Somalia for infringing on its territorial integrity. Geopolitical consultant Norman Rickliffe offered his assessment of the situation.
Obviously, Ethiopia needs access to a coastline. It's the second largest country in Africa. It's a booming economy. And somehow that deal needs to be made, but it's not going to be easy because of the previous deal earlier this year with Somaliland.
Somalia this week threatened to block access to Ethiopian airlines in the latest round of diplomatic tensions. But analysts say Ankara is well placed to mediate, given its historical and deepening ties with both countries. Elem Ericer Tepecioğlu is an African studies professor at the Social Sciences University of Ankara.
Turkey established its largest embassy in Somalia's capital. It also established its largest military training facility again in Somalia. But Turkey also has old and established relations with Ethiopia as well.
The Somali parliament ratified an agreement earlier this year under which Turkey will help protect its territorial waters and participate in the search for hydrocarbons there. Turkey is one of the largest investors in Ethiopia. Analysts say more than diplomatic kudos are at stake for Ankara in resolving the Ethiopia-Somalia tensions, given the region's location on one of the world's key trade routes and vast untapped potential. Again, geopolitical consultant Norman Ricklefs.
There's a reason why the Horn of Africa has American military bases, Chinese military bases. Japanese even have a base in that area. It's hydrocarbon resources and other resources like agricultural resources and have not been developed and would need networks of infrastructure that a country like Turkey could provide if there was security and stability.
Talks are set to resume in September. Analysts say success would underscore Turkey's growing influence in a region of increasing international competition. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
We now turn to our listener comments for this week. And we begin with this listener. Peter Goch Anyang Majongdul in Bor Town of Jonglei State writes, Cameroonians should register if they want to get rid of President Biya. Otherwise, Paul Biya will remain there. Daniel Ariek Michael in Yei Town writes, Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. U.S. democratic elections means a lot to the whole world, especially South Sudan, that is due for their elections in December. South Sudan's political candidates should therefore follow U.S. system of elections for betterment of the citizens of South Sudan. Civic space and the freedom of speech and expression should be the first priority before and after elections for future generations, so that fear does not loom in the faces of people for their numerous elections coming. A listener who calls himself Papa from Yambio writes, Hello, VOA. I have one concern about the U.S. general election. I can say Joe Biden has made a big mistake of nominating Kamala as his successor. Of course, in the history of America, I did not see any name of a female president, and Trump found it open net to win election. Amos Hamis from Yei writes, Hello, John and Nabil Biagio. It's unfortunate that the arresting powers in South Sudan is now in the hands of every armed force. My question to the government is, what is the role of the police and the criminal investigation department? A listener who refers to himself as Robert in Yambio writes, Good evening, John Tanza. Life is unpredictable in South Sudan. I don't know how the future of our country is going to be. King Budwe said, we will not die from war, but from hunger. Ajet Akoi from Jonglei State writes, Hello, South Sudan in Focus. I'm deeply sad to hear about the death of Ambassador Bior Ajang Duat, our humble, kind hero who died from heart attack. It's really a great loss to Twitch community and the entire South Sudanese. May God put his soul in the right place. Ustas Alfred Atar Arau from Rumbek Central County writes, Hi, John Tanza. I'm a survivor of inhuman treatment at Panda Military Barracks due to malpractice of teacher's salary. When I talk of malpractice of teacher's salary, it is malpractice being done by the State Ministry of General Education and instructions in Lake State, not me writing. In the above writing, it's not clear who did the malpractice. I was among six targets who have opened up the untold corruption happening in the State Ministry of General Education and instructions in Lake State. He concludes by saying, Thank you for understanding. We appreciate your feedback on issues in our broadcast. Send your short voice and text messages to +12026308011 and we shall sample some of them every Friday. That's all we had on our menu for you this Friday, August 23rd, 2024. We now leave you with Dismajos and the song Shane Shane. Don't forget to visit www.voaafrica.com for all updates on our programs. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Tian Wang, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah, yeah.